Hey, everybody, and welcome to a top billing Wild Ride with Steve-O. We've got, I think, the first leading man in major motion pictures that we've ever had. Big-time movie star, A-lister, Josh Duhamel. And, man, you wouldn't expect a guy at that level to be so intimate, so open, so honest, so vulnerable. I mean, man, it really, we really open up and go deep. So strap on your seatbelts, baby. This one's intense. Let's get into it. Well, here we go, man. We'll dive right in.
Let's do it.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm not going to pretend to know how to say this guy's name.
Well, if you're in France, I think it's Duhamel, but we've always said Duhamel.
Duhamel,
yeah.
Because our mutual friend, Sam Macaroni,
yeah,
he always called you Josh Duhamel.
Yeah.
And then I gave him a shout this morning to try to get some inside tips.
Yeah.
And he says that you're going to tell me it's Duhamel.
Well, it, like I said, the proper way is Duhamel. That's what the French say, but I don't know. We just dropped the H-A somewhere in there.
Okay, well then I would have just said Duhamel.
Yeah,
and then I asked him if you were
French.
Then
you would have been right, Steve. But
man, but our buddy Sam Macaroni messed me up.
Well, I said, is he French? And he's like, no, he's Dutch. And I'm like, how does that make sense?
Well, he said I'm French, or he said I'm Dutch.
Yeah,
I don't think I have any Dutch in me.
Man, and now I'm off to a terrible start.
You clearly can't trust anything Sam Macaroni says.
Yeah, of course.
By
not.
The way, his proper pronunciation is Macaron.
I know.
And he goes by Macaroni.
Right.
Why doesn't he go by Macaron? It's so much cooler.
I can tell you why.
Tell me.
Okay. Because there was a project that he and I worked on.
Mm-hmm.
Many years ago, that he is so terribly ashamed of, that he doesn't want Google searches to bring up that awful project. So he formally changed his name to try to distance himself from it.
Now
that's extreme.
He probably would be mortified that I said that, but he also would be like, oh, he's the greatest guy.
He really is. We had a blast in Mexico.
Right.
We were right in the middle of COVID. We shot a movie called Blackout.
Yeah, and it was the number one movie on Netflix
For a minute, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
He did a great job on it, but it was almost like a social experiment. It was right in the middle, like the height of COVID. When everybody thought you were going to die. But he was able to pull it off where we rented this 2-star hotel in Mexico City, kept all the cast, the crew, the staff, everybody had to be
in the bubble.
In the bubble inside this thing. We built out the top two floors for set. One was like a hotel, or I'm sorry, one was a hospital, and the other one was, I forget what they dressed that out as, but. Then everybody stayed in the rooms below that, and they had the chefs and everything stayed in house. The food was absolutely terrible. I was thinking, we're going to Mexico. The food's going to be great. And it was like worse than jail slop.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But it was almost, it was so, like I said, almost a social experiment because we all lived together. So if we'd have an idea, we'd get together every night. And we'd talk about what we're going to do the next day. We'd go up to the set and we'd like work things out. And then we'd go in the next day and do it. It was like living on the set of a movie.
Yeah, very, very literally.
Yeah, and it worked. I mean, it really worked because we were able to do things much more efficiently in the amount of time we had.
Yeah. Sam Macaroni, of course, was the director of that movie. I've known him for the longest time. And his move to be a big director, like, it was all hinged on this. And I remember, like, when he was just agonizing over getting the leading man and who he was, you know, and when he landed you, like, that.
Really? Wow, that feels good. You know, he got kind of, you know, I hate to say it because Netflix is such a juggernaut, but his movie, the one that he turned in, was a really cool, sort of quirky, offbeat version of it. They took it and turned it into a straight action movie. And I felt terrible for him because he'd poured his heart out, you know, yeah. editing. If you've directed anything, it's like, it's like you put everything you have into that edit. You know, you shoot everything you can in the amount of time you've got, and then you just pour over the edit. And it completely changed it on him.
I get that. And at the same time, I think that they understand their business like pretty well, yeah. and whatever changes they made to it evidently worked pretty well because it shot the movie to the first place.
Listen, they definitely know what they're doing. They definitely do. I mean, they've got all the algorithms and all the research behind it, so they know like what exactly is going to hit to what demographic. But his was like this cool, quirky, like
and I think that hindsight being 2020, that everybody involved is happy it went the way it went.
Yeah.
And that, like, because...
You work for Netflix, don't you?
I don't. But, right. but you know, even with streamers, the movies, it's just high-stakes gambling.
Yeah.
You know, it's high-stakes gambling, and when you do a project that project is your only shot at getting another project, you know, for a lot of people.
Yeah, but he did so well with House Guests.
And then that bumped him up to the next level to get, like, a real, like, legit leading man.
Well, he's a good director. He really is. He's talented. And I love his energy. He's got the best energy.
He's like that 24/7.
Yeah, he really is. I don't know how he does it, honestly.
Yeah. It's incredible. So now we've got the new Buddy Games.
Yeah.
And it's just debauchery.
Yeah, it really is. Well, we're trying to be like you, Steve-O. This movie is based on... The first movie was based on something my buddies and I do every year called the Buddy Games, where we get together every third weekend of August and have a weekend of games, from wiffle ball to ping pong to golf. And then we always throw in one or two crazy-ass games. Like, one year it was human bowling, where we had this giant, probably, you know, inspired by some of the Jackass stuff you guys did. Later on, it became more and more crazy. But we had this giant human bowling where you put this giant piece of Visqueen down on this hill. And you go running, and you go down, and you have to try to take out as many of these garbage cans as you can. And meanwhile, everybody's got rubber or water balloons to chuck at you along the way. And that was one of them. Another year it was you had to stand there in your underwear with a helmet on. The other guy got to stand about 20 yards away with a paintball gun and shoot. And if you flinch when you hear the thump, you'd lose points. And some of the video that we got from that, I mean, this whole thing is based on, you know, these, you know, we're now middle-aged men who for one weekend out of the year get to go act like 16-year-olds again. Our wives hate it, but it keeps us young in a weird way.
Sure.
And the movie is based on that. It's based on these guys. It's really based on the friendship and the camaraderie and the brotherhood that these guys have. And, you know, from that comes absolute debauchery.
Yeah.
And this movie is no different.
Yeah, this guy Vinny over here, maybe not quite middle age, but he likes to keep himself young. We just had him on tour, and he put together a big package of various items and stuffed it right up his butt.
Is that right? It keeps me young.
Oh, man.
It's like a cleanse,
I guess.
Yeah.
You know,
we've had
your colon clean.
It's the batteries that keeps me charged up.
Is it still up there?
No. Thank God.
There's been a bunch of episodes where we've just celebrated what was called the prison pocket.
Okay.
Where he actually, you know, had to go to jail.
The prison pocket being his asshole.
Yeah, big time. He had to go to jail, and he had a heroin habit at the time. So when he surrendered to go to jail, he went in with a bunch of stuff up his butt. And we've been so fascinated by it. We've talked about it so much.
Just won't leave it alone.
we say, you know what? Like, can you do a demo?
Celebrate you getting to Australia.
Oh, man. It's just so much fun.
Oh, that's amazing.
It's my rocket ship to fame.
Yeah, I mean, maybe that's the next Buddy Game.
I wouldn't put it past any of these guys.
Sounds like Josh's buddies know how to have a good time, and I can relate, because I'm real good at having a good time. And a good time only gets better with Blue Chew tablets, because, dude, it's got the same active ingredient as both Viagra and Cialis, except it's a fraction of the price. And I'm telling you something about this, it's a lot of fun. And, man, it makes my relationship with my lady a lot more fun. Candidly. Plus, you can get an entire month's supply of these awesome Blue Chew tablets, which are now actually more delicious than ever, I've noticed. And you can get that entire month's supply completely for free. All you pay is $5 for shipping. Man, what a deal. So, to get this deal, go to BlueChew.com and use the promo code STEVO. For the prescription, too, you take care of that on the website in a couple minutes, easy, with their medical provider right on the website. That's BlueChew.com, and with the promo code STEVO, an entire month's supply, absolutely for free. All you pay is $5 for shipping. So jump on that deal, and let's get back to it.
Are these characters in the movie based on, like, your buddies? Like,
yes.
Did you match them
loosely
up?
Loosely based. I mean, Nick Swartzen's character is pretty closely based on one of my best friends, Chad Bjork, who I've known since kindergarten.
Mm-hmm.
Funny, really funny, super talented dude. Always like on the verge of success, but just not, hasn't quite made it yet. And that's Bender. We call him Broken Man in the second movie. Or he gets named that by this woke cult that we get captured by. So his name is Broken Man. We've got Kevin Dillon. They call him Beef Chimmy. And we've got Dan Bacadall, who's Swollen Tick. But, you know, this second movie is really social commentary in a lot of ways on some of the extremes of the woke
ideology
stuff going on. And we did it in a fun way, a way that's not mean-spirited. It's all good-hearted, but you know, I thought, you know, why not? This is some of the stuff is really funny, and I felt like it was ripe for the picking.
Sure, and you directed this,
yes,
as well as the first one.
Yes,
and is that your first directing roles?
Yeah. The first Buddy Games was my first one, and this is my second. I've done a couple TV things since then, but
right,
yeah.
It was Disney Plus.
Yeah, I did Mighty Ducks.
Right,
did an episode of that. I have another one I'm going to be doing in hopefully, you know, pending the writer strike this fall, called Preschool, about these two dads who are fighting to get their child into the last spot in this prestigious LA preschool. And it's not as R-rated as the Buddy Games movies,
yeah,
but it's a fun and funny expose on, you know, life as a parent trying to get your kid into a preschool.
How different is being on set when you're just an actor or actor-director? Is there a difference? I mean, obviously, but... how much more complicated is that?
It just makes it... it's like a... I got into it because I really always felt like I wanted to do it. It was something that I always felt like I would have a knack for, but never really had the confidence to do it because I didn't feel like I knew enough. Mm-hmm. But as I got further along in this business, I knew that I didn't have to know everything. I just needed a good group of people around me to help sort of make it work and let them do their thing. And the acting part on camera is probably the part I like the least because I've never been so ill-prepared as an actor as I am when I'm directing, because you're not thinking about it until it's like time. Maybe that's a good thing because you're not thinking about it so much, but it's not my favorite thing because you can't see the monitor. You're sitting there on screen with other actors acting while you're going, wait, I got to adjust that, I got to adjust this, and you're not really fully in the scene like you should be.
I would imagine that being the director as well as an actor, that you'd be kind of self-conscious. Because when you're an actor, you can have a relationship with the director where it's understood, hey, if you don't like what you're seeing, you tell me.
Yeah.
You know, like, mm-hmm. you be honest and don't sugarcoat it, you know, like,
yeah,
get the best out of me.
Yep, yep.
And when you're the director, you're like...
You don't have anybody there. But I did have Rachel Thaley, who's been my right hand. She helped write this last one, actually, along with Gabe McKinley. I trust her. You know, I'm like, right. You got to tell me if I sucked in that last take, please. If there's things that I need to do better, tell me. You're not going to hurt my feelings.
Right.
Because I don't have any way to know. I'm sitting there on, you know, and as an actor, you're there and you don't know until the director tells you.
Right.
But if you're directing it, the only person that can tell me is me. So you need somebody on behind the monitor that can tell you when you suck, which is often.
What's it like directing somebody like Nick Swardson? Is he... Was there a lot of times where he's like going off script, improvising? Because to me, he's like
you probably
a
want
comedy
him to do that.
Legend.
All
you know?
Day, every day, he goes off script.
Yeah.
And that's what I love about him. Nick Swardson. Right. You know, I'm sure you know Nick.
For sure.
Yeah, we had him on here.
Oh, yeah. He's one of my best friends. I just love that guy dearly. He does. He goes off script all day. And in fact, he'll come on days he's not even working. Just to be there to help punch up scenes. Mm-hmm. He's that invested in it. And he stays really sharp during production. And he comes up... Oh, my God, that dude. He comes up with some of the most raunchy shit. Mm-hmm. There's a scene where... I was like, dude, really? I don't think we can do... He's like, just do it. It's comedy. You got to go hard. I'm like, okay, I trust you. And he did this thing. There's a scene in the movie where we've been taken... sort of captive by this cultish sort of tribe of people, and we realize they're not going to let us go, and he's like, just let us go. I will suck all your dicks and eat all your pussies. You don't even have to shower. I'll just go down. I'm like, whoa. But that's Nick Swardson in a nutshell. That guy goes dark quick.
Did you find any of his improv to fit better than the actual script? Like, did you use any of it? Yeah.
Oh, all the time.
Yeah.
This stuff is usually better than anything we would have written.
Yeah.
You know, and that he's a really good comic writer.
Yeah, he's like, if you buy me a drink, I'll munch your box for a week.
Yes. Yes.
And that's just like,
yeah, that was
like
all
that.
Nick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What about the scene when he had the boner? Was that, do you have buddies? I mean, was that based off of
that? Was real? Mine, actually. That was my idea, and he went for it. But, you know, he makes all the stuff about, like, what'd he say? This is that's called an erection. Yeah. That's what boys get when they wake up in the morning. is your pussy hard?
Yeah, that was good. Yeah. That was good.
That's all Nick, you know, and thank God he does it, because we want this thing to be hard hitting. You know, I love comedies that are unapologetic and they go hard in the paint. And he brings that. He really does.
Yeah, dude. For sure.
I don't know if you remember the first movie. There was a scene where we had this. He was trying to make money so he could, because I made up this excuse not to have him at the buddy games, and we had to. I told him that this year there's an entry fee. He's like, okay, fine. What is it? $40? I'm like, it's $10,000. He's like, are you kidding me? I can't. So there's a whole montage of him raising the money to be able to come, and he goes to this. He parks his van across the street from these little girls who have a lemonade stand. And he starts talking shit to them back and forth. And he says, what'd he say to them? You're both gonna be strippers when you grow up. Really bad ones that no one pays to see. And it was so great because they're these two innocent girls that, you know, nobody would get away with except for that dude.
Yeah.
You know, he's just like, he for whatever reason, we forgive him for his crazy shenanigans.
Yeah. He's genius.
Is it true that we read that you were studying to be a dentist?
Yes.
It was your childhood dream to become a dentist.
Well, it wasn't. I don't know. It was a dream. It was an aspiration. I don't know if it was a dream.
But
it was
not childhood.
Why? What about the mouth?
Pretty early on, I think this is the reason. I think I was always good at drawing and making things with my hands, like clay and, you know, painting and things like that. And my mother was at an early age was pushing me to see what I was going to be when I grew up. I'm like, I'm a freshman. I don't know. In high school. And by my sophomore, this was actually earlier, she was pressing me. I was like, I don't know. I'm just a pro athlete. Well, that quickly didn't materialize. But I came up with the idea to be a dentist because I could use my abilities with my hands, my artistic, you know, whatever, and I could call myself a doctor, and that would make her happy. And I didn't have the same sort of stress that you would have as a normal doctor, and it'd make mom happy. And I really, I would go, I got my degree in biology, went to Minot State University, got that degree, which was not easy. Went and observed a bunch of different dentists, took the DAT, which is like the MCAT, but for dentists. And then moved to California, you know, telling my mom that I was going to go to dental, I was going to apply to dental school. But meanwhile, I think I always wanted to do what we're doing now, and didn't tell her. And then once I got my first job on all my children, she forgot about the dentist thing, and she was fine with me being on a soap.
The first job, you say all my children,
mm-hmm.
but you're going right past the male model.
Yeah, well, that came a little earlier. But right. You know that I was
male model of the year, beating Ashton Kutcher.
Well, it's a pretty big deal.
It's been sort of blown out of proportion though, because yes, I won male model of the year at this IMTA convention in New York, which is like a bunch of aspiring. I got asked to go to this thing. And I was fresh out of North Dakota. I was living in Sacramento. This agent at the time asked me to go to this thing, and they would pay. They would sponsor me to go. I was like, hell yeah, I've never been in New York. I'll do that. It was like, I think, $1,500 to get in. So I went. And after a few days, there was the buzz around the whole thing was that, ooh, it's between you and this kid from wherever, and then this kid from Iowa, which was Chris Kutcher at the time. And then it came down to this
Chris Kutcher?
Yeah, his real name was Chris Kutcher.
Wow, okay.
I don't know if he wants me to say that.
I mean,
I love Ashton. I love Ashton, but that was his name at the time. And I think
I'm sure Wikipedia he's rich. Would he doesn't probably care. Say.
He is, yeah, he's doing just fine.
Yeah.
But he...
I probably don't have to tell you this, but Ashton Kutcher is doing just fine because he's a businessman. And I'm also a businessman. And a large part of the reason why I'm doing just fine is ShipStation, because I built an audience online and I sell products to them. Awesome products like Steve-O's butt wipes for your butthole. These are the best butt wipes you can possibly get. And how do you get them? Get them at Steve-O.com. And when you order them, I get a little label prints out in my warehouse. My warehouse guys take that label and it tells them to put butt wipes for your butthole in the package. They put the label on the package and the package goes to you. And it is so simple because ShipStation brings in all the various ways of selling. If it's Etsy, Amazon, your own website, it all comes right into this interface along with all the ways of shipping stuff. FedEx, United States Postal Service, UPS. I mean, it's all there, and they give you the best rates that are normally reserved for Fortune 500 companies. And if you go to ShipStation.com and use the promo code Steve-O, you get to try it all out for 6 months, free trial, totally for free. And it's risk-free, so there's nothing to lose, and there's everything to gain. You could be like Ashton Kutcher and your boy Steve-O if you learn how to take advantage of this internet world and e-commerce. And the way to do that is with ShipStation. So for your 60-day free trial, one more time, go to ShipStation.com and use the promo code Steve-O. It's time to make ship happen, baby. Now, let's get back to it.
It became like the buzz was, who's it going to be, me or this kid? And it became this, it was almost like a beauty pageant. We walked the runway in our underwear. We did like this. It was just so ridiculous. I look back at it now and, you know, you say, do you have any regrets? And most people say, I don't regret anything. Well, I regret that.
I mean, I wouldn't have brought it up if I just didn't find it so unbelievably awesome that you were a male model so close to the time that Zoolander came out.
It was like a real life Zoolander. It really was. I look back at it now, and when I won that thing, dude, I was like Miss America. They were holding me up. They should have put a sash across my a tiara, the whole thing. But I won. You know, it was like third runner up is whoever, and then second or first runner up is, and we're both waiting on pins and needles. Chris Kuchar, and I was like, oh my God, I won male model league.
How many people did you beat out?
I don't know. There's a bunch of guys there, but the best part about the story is that right after that, I won it. He took second, and he went on to like major stardom right away.
70s show.
That 70s show. He did a big Calvin Klein thing.
Where's my car?
A bunch of stuff. And meanwhile, I didn't get anything for like 5 years. Hmm. I was so pissed. I was like, but I'm male model of the year. And I had to beat the streets and I modeled like after that for maybe a year, because I was really bad at it and never got comfortable, you know, taking photos. It was never something I was very good at. I wanted to do TV commercials and where I could actually do something.
Yeah. And when did the All My Children start?
That started in, let's see, I won the... that in 97, moved to LA. I was living in San Francisco at the time, and then moved to LA, lived with my buddies there for a little bit, started taking, you know, really getting into, that was about the time I'd forgone dental school and really wanted to get into acting. And I got All My Children, I think, in 99. So about a year and a half of beating the streets in LA and ended up getting this gig, which made me then move back to New York. So I was there for 3 years.
The commercials thing is something that you really hung on to. Macaroni told us that now you've got like a whole company that just makes commercials.
Yeah, we have a company called Dakota Media that does, you know, as I'm sure you guys get, you know, people, they want you to take a photo with whatever new water or whatever new thing is out there. And I was like, well, we could do better. If I'm going to sell myself out to do this stuff, let's make it cool and interesting and consumable for people that are watching it. And it doesn't just look like a straight up, I'm getting paid to hold this drink right now. So the idea came from that. And we started shooting this. We shot, one of them was Hyundai. And we said, well, we're going to go out and we're going to actually shoot something. So we shot this whole, spent 2 days shooting this little commercial for it, which led to the next one, which led to the next one. And now we're doing a lot of really cool stuff, mostly in sports now. It's like branded storytelling. It's not so much commercials as it is like, who does a good job of it? Yeti does a really good job of this stuff, is sort of telling a story with Yeti kind of in the background. And so that's kind of what we do.
Macaroni didn't get a goddamn thing right. Not one.
Well, I guess you could call them commercials.
Right.
And I would, trust me, if we got like a, you know, a Cadillac commercial, we'd be happy to go shoot that. But mostly it's, we do a lot of stuff for Bobcat. Uh-huh. We just did a really cool thing for the LA Rams in the draft, or around the draft.
Yeah.
And then we've got some other, we got Tampa Bay Lightning is another one of our clients. Okay. And we've got some other stuff that's coming up that's fun. And I you know, for me, I love the development, the creative side of it, coming up with ideas, then figuring out how to shoot it, and then going and shooting it, and, you know, all the process of making something. It keeps you sharp, I think. And it keeps you creative. And it's a good way to sort of keep doing stuff that I love.
Yeah, for sure. And so you said the Rams and the
Lightning.
The Lightning.
Yeah.
And that's right in your wheelhouse, right? You're all about the sport.
Yeah, I'm a big sports fan. I'm a big Vikings fan, like Nick.
Why the Vikings?
I'm from North Dakota, so it's like, you know, that's the team you root for. And
yeah.
It's them or the Packers, and I'm certainly not going to root for the Packers.
Right.
Not a chance.
but Nick definitely likes the Vikings.
Oh yes, he does. He is the number one fan, I believe.
Yeah, big time. And you were a quarterback in college.
I was. Steve, you did your homework for this.
A little bit. Yeah.
I was. I played quarterback at Minot State University, in the town that I grew up. But at the time, we were NAIA Division II. Thought I was going to be a professional athlete, and then realized I wasn't nearly athletic enough. But yeah, that was my you know, growing in North Dakota. There's not much else to do in the winter, especially.
And you're tall.
Yeah, I played a lot of hockey growing up too, and I just got too tall and skinny.
I've been very, very vocal about how attractive Tom Brady is, and you might be an even better looking quarterback.
Hey, I'll take it.
What was your the most yards you've ever passed for in a game in college, or what was your best game?
Probably not much more than 300 yards. I mean, but that was not often. We were short passing, kind of a West Coast offense kind of thing. But my freshman year, I'll never forget. It was like, this is when I thought, like, oh my God, this is the, I'm going to the league. I got put in the fourth quarter as a freshman, and I threw for, I think, 3 or 4 touchdowns in like 210 yards or something.
One quarter.
Yeah, it was like I couldn't. They were just everything I threw up, they would catch.
Yeah.
And it was one of those games that, you know, you never see again, you know, and I was probably going against the fourth string defense at the time. So, but I don't like to, you know, leave that part of the story in.
What's the hardest you've ever been hit as a quarterback? Do you have a time where you just got your bell
rung?
Oh,
God, many times. You know, do you ever play football?
I was the long snapper and I quit.
Okay.
So that's all I know. Then I played water polo.
Well, I remember that for me, it was like, there was one time in high school and then another time in college where I for sure had a concussion, because I remember getting hit and I remember seeing perfectly shaped stars like in a circle. And it was like, and at the time there was no concussion protocol. It was just like, get back in the game, rub some dirt on it and get out there. And then again in college, my mom was in the stands, and I remember I just got crushed by this big D end, and I remember hearing my mom in the audience go, "Oh,
yeah."
And those are the. I mean, I was one of those quarterbacks who avoided contact at all costs. I was always trying to. I was like a
you slid
straight up pocket passer. You know, I wasn't one of these quarterbacks now that can run and take hits and do the whole thing. I avoided that.
I think Dan Marino in his career rushed for a negative number of yardage.
Yeah. Really? Yeah. That was me, basically.
Yeah. Steve, what's the hardest you've ever been hit that you saw?
You ever
seen stars? Or do you just pass straight out?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the most clearly I was knocked unconscious was on that treadmill in the last Jackass movie. But that's because we're older, you know? Turns out you get older, it's a lot easier to knock you unconscious.
But that, out of your whole career, that's the one?
Well, when I was in the WWE match, like, I don't remember leaving the ring.
Really?
Yeah, it was...
You had a concussion, probably.
It was 2006. We were promoting the second Jackass movie, and so we got... We're doing this match, Chris Pontius and I. But I didn't know about wrestling. And I didn't know that you're supposed to, like, play dead, like, when the... for the match to be over.
Yeah.
And my natural sort of... when I get hit, it's like I react. You know,
you get back up.
Yeah, so like what was supposed to be the final thing, like the Samoan bulldozer, this huge wrestler, 300 and some pounds, jumps off the top rope and does what's called a splash. He lands right on me. Ooh. And I'm rolling around like, oh, dude, oh, no. And that this is offensive to the wrestler because that's not protocol.
You're supposed to just lay
still.
Yeah.
Like it's over.
It was Rashiki, right?
It was Umaga.
Yeah.
And so because I was kept moving around, this was offensive to him, and so he had to keep.
Yeah.
And he just kept and he kept hitting. I'm thinking it's supposed to be over, so I'm like stop, please stop. But I'm still moving around, so he keeps going.
He's hitting you in the face.
He dropped this elbow on me that was so brutal. Dude. I don't remember, like. I don't remember leaving the ring. They didn't even show the end. Like it got so dark that they just the logo came in and they went to commercial.
Oh
in
my!
In the middle, like God. They didn't. It didn't end.
And then what's the next thing you remember?
So there's no footage of me leaving the ring, and I don't remember leaving the ring, and so yeah, that would probably be the hardest ever.
Oh my God!
What do you remember next?
I remember the next thing I remember. I was in like a control room. Chris Pontius describes that we were in this control room and Vince McMahon was in there like, yeah, that was great.
Yeah, of course he was.
But yeah, interesting that
you must have taken some serious hits though, and all the stuff you guys have done over the years. I mean,
there's been some, dude. On the first special, Guilty as Charged, when Tim Kennedy dropped me on my head,
oof. You played that off good, but like, I mean, I remember that. you did it the first time and it didn't look cool. And then before you went out on stage a second time, you're like, make sure he drops me on my head. And then he walks out, and then Tim's like, what did he say? And I'm like, he said, make sure you do it harder next time and drop him on his head. And he's like,
this is okay. At the time, I think he was a top 10 ranked
UFC. He's top five heavyweight UFC fighter at the time.
Really? And it was who?
Tim Kennedy.
So when I wanted him to choke me on, the bit was I cut a lemon in half, squeeze all the lemon juice in my eyes, and then get choked unconscious and dropped on my head.
So during the special,
he lifted me up, my feet off the ground, and got me completely unconscious and just dropped me from up there.
Oh,
and
my
head bounced like a basketball off the
stage.
So
lucky you're still with us.
And he was out for like 10-15 seconds during the filming of the special,
and
which
I,
we
and
left
then,
in.
And then I hopped up and kept on with the act.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What a showman.
You didn't even feel your eyes burning. You know,
yeah, that's true. That's the crazy thing. I didn't even notice the lemon juice when I got up.
That's wild. And then at the end of that, Sam Macaroni tasered him while they are asking him questions.
Sam Macaroni is really a good friend of mine. And
clearly.
Like, friends like these.
Yeah. The idea was that I was going to set myself on fire and something like that, but they really, really shut that down at the theater. So I needed an alternate, big stunt ending for the act. And I was like, okay, well, I'll get a shot with the taser, with the actual wires and the barbs.
Oh my God. The ones that the police use that go in,
right.
And then
now for the ones that the police use, it gives you 50,000 volts for 5 seconds. And then the police can hit it again add more 5 seconds. But the Tim Kennedy told me, he said, I wasn't able to get the law enforcement kind. I got the civilian kind, which is different in that when you shoot, it goes for 30 seconds. The idea being that like a woman can shoot her attacker, drop the thing and run.
And it continues?
It just goes for 30 seconds to give 30 seconds to get away from your attacker. And so I was like, oh man, 30 seconds is rough. And what we arrived at is that it would be a 30-second Q&A hosted by Sam Macaroni.
He did well.
Oh, dude, it was great. I was worried that 30 seconds, it was just going to get kind of boring. You know, like 30, the same thing for 30 seconds. Oh. So we made it a Q&A, and it was,
A Q&A while you were getting tased?
Yeah. 30 seconds of me being 3,000 volts. Like,
Do you remember what he asked you?
I remember. Where are you? I think, what is your name? How big is your dick? These are silly questions, but it was really funny.
Oh my God.
Yeah, that was fun.
Yeah.
Steve, you are a legend, dude.
Oh, well, dude, thank you, man.
I mean it, man. I would never have the balls that you've had. Do you still want to do that kind of stuff, or are you past it now?
Like, now I incorporate, I mean, at that time, that was my first comedy special, and it was me performing stand-up and then intermittently doing stunts on stage that were kind of organic to the act.
Yeah.
And then my next comedy special was telling stories and with the footage of the stories edited into it. And then now I'm getting ready to tape my third comedy special, which I filmed all new stuff. And I tell the stories and show the footage.
But you didn't actually have to go do it again.
I don't do it every night or anything like that. The footage, I shoot the footage, and then I make the act out of it.
I see. So it's multimedia. But you actually go and still do some of this crazy stuff.
I mean, tell them what we have planned next, the tits.
The next one, after I tape this next special, which is the bucket list special, then I start putting together the Steve-O's Gone Too Far tour. And that one is me confronting my middle age, lashing out at Father Time.
Yeah.
See, I've got dimples developing. Actually, I already have dimples under my man boobs. This is just what happens. Your body starts to droop.
Oh, I know, dude. I know.
And I'm so mad that Father Time has given me man boobs that I'm going to go and try and get them double D's.
Oh, wait.
With
wait,
proper
wait.
Breast surgery.
You're going to get breast implants?
Yeah, I'll only keep them for like 3 months. You know, like, yeah. so I can film all the bits, the vignettes for the tour. But yeah, like, I've got, you know, like, I got my wrinkling going on, like, my face is, you know, I don't want anyone noticing it, so I got to get a big dick tattooed on my forehead, so that's all anybody sees.
Wait, so you're really going to do actual dick tattooed?
I'll end up getting it lasered off, but yeah, I'm going to properly get...
Still?
Yeah.
That's a lot of pain to endure. So they got to cut you open and put breasts in, and then...
And so many people are trying to talk me out of getting...
Like who?
Boob jobs. Just people, comments from people.
Oh.
And then there's something that absolutely nobody's trying to talk me out of doing, which is being thoughtful and considerate about the environment by drinking liquid death. Why is it so good for the environment? Because it's all in infinitely recyclable aluminum cans, not plastic, which is destroying the world. You heard about that big plastic island, right? Yeah, it's very real. And liquid death started out with the mountain spring water and the sparkling water, then the flavored water. Now they've got these epic 19.2 fluid ounce cans of tea, iced tea. Super healthy, full of vitamins, not a lot of sugar, absolutely delicious. This is the convicted melon. Oh, sorry, this is Reston Peach. You got the Armless Palmer. I mean, this company is the greatest. And if you order this tea from Liquid Death on Amazon or some of your local retailers, you can get free shipping, which is crazy. Plus, listeners of the Wild Ride podcast can get 20% off of your first order of apparel at liquiddeath.com if you use /Stevo. That's liquiddeath.com/Stevo for 20% off of your first order of apparel. And if you haven't seen Liquid Death apparel, it's epic. It's hilarious. It's epic. The social media for this company is like, I think they're the most followed beverage drink. Like, I don't know. I mean, dude, they're killing it. So support Liquid Death by going to liquiddeath.com/Stevo, buying the tea on Amazon, your local retailers. Just support this company, man. liquiddeath.com/Stevo. Now let's get back to it. And they don't understand that the more they try to tell me not to do it, the more that it's like, okay, so you're telling me it's awesome.
Yeah, you're telling me it's so rad.
The first person who I voiced my plan to, right when I came up with the idea, was Nick Swardson. I said to him on the podcast, it was like episode number 9 in 2020. I said, dude, I'm going to get tits. And he goes... His reaction was so classically just bummed.
God.
Yeah. So I got like the whole thing is just like the theme of it is confronting my middle age and lashing out and kind of, you know, it feels a little bit like a last hurrah, you know. But then again, I don't know. I don't think I can stop being an attention whore.
Josh, how did you confront middle age differently than Steve would approach it?
I try to take a more holistic approach.
I heard you talking about yoga.
Bought a car.
Tell us about the yoga. How often do you do that?
Well, like you, I am now a middle-aged man, 50 years old, and you know, it's a hard truth to, you know, to come to terms with. And but at the same time, I think part of the reason is that these movies help, you know, keep that kid alive. But personally, it's like, you know, yoga, and it's ice baths, and it's acting like an idiot with my buddies, and like my dad said, don't let the old man in the door. And that really stuck with me. It's like he's right. Don't let the old man in the door, because once you do, you become that thing that you're sort of avoiding.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to get man boobs. But I do work hard at trying to avoid the, you know, that inevitable inevitable, you know, breast thing that happens to all of us. They just start to hang.
Yeah, it sucks. How often
why not fill them out? It's actually a really good idea. You might be onto something for sure.
Yeah, I mean, that, like, secretly, I'm kind of happy that the world's most famous plastic surgeon, Terry Dubrow, of the show Botched.
Okay.
And this guy fixes everything. He's just the best there is.
Yeah.
And I talked to him about the idea, and he said, oh, well, I mean, I wouldn't put him in, but I could take him out. And, like, you know, to the extent that, like, taking him out and kind of do his thing, I could end up.
So where are you going to get him put in? Somewhere in Mexico?
I don't know.
Who's going to do that?
Sam Macaroni knows the guy, I'm sure.
That's Scott's job is to.
Yeah, we can find somebody.
Have you guys seen the dude on Instagram? I forget his name, but he has the butt implant. And he does all the crazy stuff.
Is that the guy who was always, like, jogging?
He's jogging, or he's running, doing sprinting,
that's a real UFC butt implant?
I think so.
Yeah.
I don't know if it is, but you're talking about the guy who's, like, he did the UFC fight, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's really funny.
It's really funny.
He's a UFC fighter?
No, he's not a fighter. He's just, like, a social media influencer. Yeah. But he has, like, these butt implants, and the videos are, like, really, really funny.
He always wears these really tight pants with a you know, apple bottom.
Yeah.
Wow.
It looks pretty good.
are you a big UFC fan?
Yes, huge.
Dude,
huge UFC
it.
Fan.
Yeah. We're heading out there this week.
Who fights this week?
Angela Hill and Mackenzie Dern.
Okay.
I'm friends with Angela Hill.
Okay.
We actually commentated for another MMA organization, Cage Warriors.
Okay.
And I think she was
on that with you?
Yeah, she was. We were on the.
You had a lot of fun doing that.
I had a blast. I think I might do it again on June 2nd.
Where?
Cage Warriors Angela down Hill. In San Diego.
Angela Hill. I'm trying to figure out who that is again.
Angela Hill. She's been prolific.
I should know this as I do. I literally watch every one of them that comes on. I'm trying to remember.
Yeah, she got robbed recently.
Mackenzie Dern's the jiu-jitsu girl.
Yeah.
Cute.
Yeah.
Is it Angie Overkill?
Angie Overkill, yeah.
Oh, wait.
Yep, Angie Overkill.
Okay, yeah, I do know who she is.
She's great, man.
Yeah.
I love her.
Damn, she's badass.
Yeah.
So we're hitting a fight this weekend?
Yeah, we are.
Dude,
I talked to Dana the other day.
That's so sick.
Yeah, we're in.
Did you see the last Luke Rockhold bare knuckle fight?
Oh, I didn't, but I saw him after.
Well, yeah.
He took a...
Broken teeth.
Broke two of his teeth or three of his teeth.
Uh-huh. Surgery on his lips.
I mean, that stuff is no joke. That's dark.
The thing is, like, okay, you're going to go bare knuckle fight Mike Perry. Like, you know he's not going down.
No.
The other guy's not going down. It's like, I was thinking about it the other day. It's like when you have a serving job, you're like, fuck, I got to go to work and serve these assholes. It's like, you know, once you're going into those fights, like, you are going to, like, your face is going to be so fucked up.
Yeah. My wife is like, but Rockhold is so cute. Why is he doing that?
Right, he is.
You know, and she was like upset by the fact that this dude was getting in the ring. I was like, easy.
Easy. I was a model in the 90s, too.
Loma fights tonight, right?
Where is that?
Oh, I guess this probably won't be on tonight, so I'll cut that out. Lomachenko fights Haney tonight. In Vegas, I think. Lomachenko, I don't know if you follow boxing at all, but Lomachenko to me is the most talented I've ever seen.
Yeah. Wow.
As far as his skill set.
Yeah, I don't really care too much about boxing because whenever I try to watch it, it seems like they're hugging each other all the time.
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan either. I'm much more of a UFC fan because the stakes are so much higher and the skill level.
Right.
The disciplines these guys have is just... And weirdly, the sportsmanship, the respect... You know, you don't see a lot of that in sports now. In the UFC, these guys, you know, they beat the crap out of each other, but they still have a mutual respect that I think is so cool.
Like sharing a ring together is like...
Yeah.
Right.
You know, no matter who gets beat, who, you know, they...
No matter how much they hate each other before,
afterwards,
like, I mean, there's like a certain thing.
Right.
Usually.
Yeah. Normally.
For the most part. We saw something, or I saw something... That really piqued my interest, that you described having a near-death experience.
Mm.
It didn't seem like it was the kind of variety where you left your body and
yeah.
Because we're super into that.
Yeah.
Like, have you ever seen the accounts of people who, like, they die, they have this experience going through the white light and the life review and all this, and then they come back to their body?
Yeah.
Like, man, we're into that.
Yeah, yeah. I read a book called, what was it called?
Life
Many
After
Lives,
Life.
Many Masters, or?
It was about,
The Hobbit.
I can't remember what they called it now, but it's like basically your body, you leave the body, and they're able to sort of fly around and see things from different angles. Yeah. Until,
right.
I can't remember what that's called now.
Astral projection.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
Read a book on that, and that was crazy to me. It's like,
I think that's different than the near-death experience phenomenon.
What was yours like?
Well, mine was not that, but it was, I've had a couple, both around the ocean. Growing up in North Dakota, we're about as far from any ocean as you can get. So I'm more of a land mammal than I'm a mm-hmm. ocean dweller. But I was in Brazil. Which one are you talking about? The one in Brazil?
I saw one. It was taken out by a wave.
Oh yeah, yeah. So that was in. The first one was in Brazil many years ago. We were shooting a movie called Turistas there, and I decided to go out body surfing with these dudes from California, and I get out there too far, and I'm trying to, you know, I learned that I'm supposed to swim underneath the wave and, you know, let it sort of
duck dive.
Yeah, duck dive. Well, I wasn't able to get close enough to it to dive under it, and it hit me. Ugh. Got tumbled. Finally got my way back up to the shore. Boom! Another one hits me, and I remember just going, oh my God, this is it. I'm going to drown right now. And I remember just fighting my way, and I finally felt sand beneath my feet, and I was able to walk back to shore. And when I got back, I was so spent, so much adrenaline dumped, that my body, like, completely, I had to lay there for like 20 minutes before I could get up anymore. I've never felt so incapacitated in my whole life. That was the first time. And then the one you're talking about was, we were in the Dominican, on a movie called, Shotgun Wedding. We were in this cove, this beautiful cove that had this, you know, a few days earlier it was really calm, and I jumped off the cliff and went in and swam. They freaked out. They didn't want me to do it, but I was like, it's just a calm little cove. Well, a few days later, it was really turbulent. I mean, it was like this fishbowl, just waves, just crashing up against this thing, and they hit the rocks. They'd fly 50 feet in the air. I was just mesmerized by this. So I thought I'd go, like, video it in slow motion just to show. Well, this rogue wave comes up, and it was all this razor rock all around. It was like super sharp rock, and this wave, and I have it on video where this wave comes up and hits and comes over the top, and you just see this thing coming. And had I not been stopped by this razor rock, I would have been washed out, and I don't know how they ever would have.
Mm-hmm. So you got all cut up.
I got really cut up. And it was right in the middle of shooting. So it was like, thankfully I had a bandage on my hand anyway for the prop. And I had a big hole in my hand from trying to brace myself. But it was, that one could have easily, had I not been, you know, stopped by that rock, I'd have been washed out. I don't know how they would have ever.
And it's interesting to me, like, had you been really hurt, then that would have presumably voided the insurance on you for the movie, right? Like, isn't that, like,
I think so.
You get insured.
Yeah.
I remember when we started doing Jackass.
How do they ever insure those movies, by the way?
It's a good question. And I don't know that they did. I think that the first Jackass movie was, what do you call it, negative pickup.
Okay.
They created, like, a ghost company that maybe didn't even exist on paper and, like, shuttled the money to it. And then we filmed the movie, and once nobody died, then Paramount found out about it.
So you never really had to insure it.
I don't know, and that would have, if there was anything like that going on, it was only for the first movie.
Yeah.
It was by the time the third movie came around, I had gotten clean and sober. I asked for the first time, hey, what happens if somebody really gets hurt or killed? And they said,
it hadn't dawned on you before that. Right.
The answer was standard workman's comp. California workman's comp laws apply in that situation.
Huh.
And I was like, all right, cool, man. So,
yeah.
Yeah, I didn't really know what that means. But, I don't think we necessarily kind of go by the standard rules.
Yeah.
But when we started, Knoxville was shooting a movie for Disney called Big Trouble.
Okay.
And he was seriously not allowed to do any dangerous stunts.
Yeah.
While he was on contract for that movie, like, all he was doing was like the fake baby, you know, yeah. like put the fake baby on the roof of the car and then drive away, and like all the low impact
yeah.
or no impact like man on yeah. the street pranks because he's shooting the movie. So yeah. I can just imagine when you're like I don't know if we've had like an actual leading man, A-list celebrity. This is exciting, man.
What?
Like
you.
Well,
I thought you were talking about Knoxville.
No, you.
Yeah, but Knoxville,
Oh, come on now. Yeah, I've seen the show. You guys have had...
We've had some good guests.
Yeah, he's...
But light on real proper leading men movie stars.
Whoa.
Yeah.
I haven't been called that.
You're a leading man.
I appreciate that.
How's it working with somebody like Shia LaBeouf?
I love Shia. He's clearly... insanely talented.
Mm-hmm.
I think misunderstood a lot. I think that he gets a bad rap. I think he does have, you know, when he's not drinking, he's much more level. And I think that he'd probably be the first one to admit it. But he, you know, he, I just, I, I've known him since he was a kid. You know, the first Transformers movie, I'll never forget. He's just such a wild card. And that's what I think makes him so great. Is he shows up at LAX. We're flying to Mexico, Alamogordo, New Mexico. And it's, I think, the first time I had actually met him. And he shows up with a black eye. And we're supposed to start shooting like 2 days later. I was like, dude, what happened? He's like, oh, these punks. I was at a Dodger game last night, and these guys started talking shit. So I, you know, got it. I was like,
yeah, he's down.
You can't do that, man. You can't do that. But he is fearless.
Yeah.
He is truly fearless. He's, you know, I got nothing but love for him.
Yeah, do you keep in touch with them?
Last time I reached out, I never heard back. So I don't know. I don't know what he's up to now.
And then you're currently on in a movie with Mel Gibson on Netflix.
Yes, called Bandit.
Yeah, the girl who was the girl next door.
Girl next door, Alicia Cuthbert. Yeah.
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 How's it working with Mel Gibson?
Great.
He's the best?
Again, I think a little bit misunderstood. I know that he's ruffled a lot of feathers over the years with some of the stuff that he's done and said, but my experience with him was great.
Yeah.
Absolute gentleman, total pro, you know. I didn't see any of the stuff that you hear about. I thought that he was fantastic. And by the way, one of the I was mostly excited to work with him because he's just one of the greatest directors mm-hmm. of all time. If you think about some of the stuff he's directed.
Passion of Christ or Braveheart.
Yeah, it's just like, it's insane. I just wanted to pick his brain about that. Like, how did you do that? And at a pretty early age.
Yeah, yeah. Wow.
Those are giant, I mean, Buddy Games is one thing, but Braveheart, that's a whole other beast.
Did he direct that?
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
At like, I also read in that his early 30s, I think.
Yeah, Kurt Russell, when he was doing Tombstone, the director wasn't doing that well, so he directed it, and they said a lot of people would have gave Kurt Russell credit for directing it, but he didn't want his name on it. He gave the guy, but I mean, something like Tombstone too, directing yeah. that and being the lead.
Who directed Kurt Russell? But
he helped. The story was whoever directed Tombstone, I don't know what it was, Deer in the Headlights, or it was. Yeah. So he pretty much directed it, huh. But he was like, "I'm not putting my name on this." But everybody on the whole set would have said he was the director.
Really?
Yeah.
I've never heard that.
Yeah.
Do you do social media? Are you on Instagram and stuff?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I got to get on there.
Yeah. It's not as exciting as yours.
Okay.
Yeah. The last one you did was snorting a worm. That was pretty exciting.
Oh, Jesus.
Snorting an earthworm. Yeah. I mean, it was an old footage, but, yeah, it didn't perform that well either, man.
You took an earthworm up the nostril and you'd think that's going to get.
Yeah.
Yeah,
a million hits.
You'd think that would be money.
Do you have plans to direct anymore?
Yeah, I'm supposed to do the movie Preschool I was telling you about that's sometime right. after, whenever the writer's strike is over, we'll be able to do that. But yeah, I mean, I really do love doing it. It's just a lot of work.
Yeah.
It's so much more work than just going in and, you know, punching your time card as an actor on a movie. It's like you are involved from the very inception all the way through
delivery. Editing and the
yeah,
the
negotiations. And I like that about it. I like the creative input and the shaping of the story and being able to sort of, because a lot of times before I'd be like, I would be acting in something with some kid who I didn't have any experience. I was like, why? Like I had the experience, but I didn't think I trusted it, you know, and to be able to have now done it a couple times, has given me the confidence, I guess, to trust that I do know enough and know enough to know that I don't have to know everything. So yeah, I mean, I'd love to do more. Why do you have a project?
Yeah, A equals D. He can direct it for you want.
So let me tell you, let me ask you about this. So I have, well, for various reasons, my wife is not drinking for the next 9 months. And I went to Vegas with my buddies last weekend.
Okay.
We all went. Me, my wife, and my buddies and their wives. So it was, I had my spiritual hazmat suit on me. You can't get in trouble that way. But, you know, I decided after this trip that I am done with her too, with the drinking too. And I got to admit, it's been like 4 days.
Uh-huh.
And I'm not a heavy drinker, but I do like to have a drink,
right.
Once a night. I like a sugar-free Red Bull vodka around 4:30, maybe another one around 6:30.
All right.
Yeah. And then I'm usually done.
Depending on it, a couple more shots.
But I got to say that it's, you know, these last couple of days, I've really had this urge to, and I was like, I don't have a problem. Maybe I do have a problem, you know? And you don't have to be a fall down drunk, I don't think, to have an issue. And I feel like maybe I do. And I feel like that alone will enhance my life. People that I know, like you, and are you
mm-hmm.
in the beverage program?
Yeah.
Everybody that I know that's done it, Dax is another one. Dax is a good buddy of mine. I played golf with Jason Bateman at the AT&T. These guys' lives have just like elevated from it.
I'm
like,
dude,
maybe there's
sure.
something to that.
Here's the thing. Any other disease, the best you can hope for is to get back to as healthy as you were before you got sick.
Yeah.
But for us, when we treat our disease, we become a better version of ourselves than we ever were before.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah, I see that a lot, and it's just kind of dawned on me recently because I don't have a drinking problem, and I'm not sure maybe I am,
there's
clearly something there that I feel like I want to explore.
Yeah,
what the potential is, just taking it out.
There's different categories of drinkers. There's what's the first one? Problem drinker.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the person who recognizes they have a problem and are able to moderate or stop altogether.
Mm-hmm. I don't remember.
And then alcoholic by definition means that you want to stop, but you just can't.
Yeah.
You know, you've got this powerlessness
yeah.
to stop. And I think it's a little bit, as a rule of thumb, if nobody who's not an alcoholic ever wonders if they're an alcoholic.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there you have it.
Yeah. There you have it. That could be a rule of thumb.
Mine was like, I was more of like trying to stop and not, and then, but I was more resentful at myself for like operating at like 60% my potential.
Yeah.
And I felt like,
I think that's where I'm at.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Yeah. On the other hand though, like, for example, if you go on any kind of a diet,
mm-hmm.
you know, like, oh, I'm going to, like, eat less.
Yeah.
You know, like, as soon as you decide you're on a diet, all you can think about is food.
Yeah.
You right. know, so the very act of seeking to quit, like,
yeah.
just makes you obsessed with it.
Yeah.
That calls to mind the saying, what you resist will persist.
Yeah.
So if you're trying to resist it,
yeah.
then that makes it more difficult.
Yeah.
And I think that for us, we consider it rather than resisting it, we surrender
yeah.
to it.
Yeah.
You know, we surrender and we admit defeat.
Yeah.
But it has nothing to do with the alcohol or whatever the vice is. It's like what are you covering up? And so, like, the very fact of, like, not medicating or numbing, like, the things that come up are the things that you have to deal with. And then once you deal with them, your life gets better. It's not like, oh, I quit drinking, my life gets better. It's like things are going to come up in your head where, like, maybe you're shoving down.
And you're probably more able to deal with them with a sober.
But you don't even know what's coming up because you're like, oh, it's, I'm going to have a drink.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
then it's like, cool. But then as it comes up, you're like, oh, fuck, what is that? And then, you know, it might be like a fear of directing or whatever the next week. It's like, then once you're like, oh, wait, what is that? And then you're like, it's plaguing me. And you start talking about it. And then you talk to somebody and it actually has something to do with something else that you fix. That's why your life gets, because the ripple effect off that root cause is what makes it better.
Yeah. It's like the thing on the desk, the balls that are hanging, like you pull back one ball and then you let it go. But it's actually something like the fourth ball down that pops off.
Yeah.
You know? Right. Like what's kicking off isn't the actual issue, it's something underneath.
Yeah.
I always wish I, like, you know, this alcoholic I am is like, I always wish that I worked the steps of the 12 step program before I quit drinking. So my life could have gotten better and I could have still drank. You know, I was always like, fuck, why didn't I do this like when I was like 18? Because then I could still drink and have a good, but like, that's not.
Yeah, mine's never been the guy who wakes up in the morning and has to continue.
Right.
But it is something that, you know, I've become accustomed to having a drink. And it's, and I've realized recently that it's holding me back, you know, and it's numbing me out to a point where I'm not as present as I need to be. I'm not as creative as I could be, and you know, I'll be a better. I'm hoping because of this and dealing with the stuff that will come up, and it is coming up now, because the last few nights I'm like, this is normally when I go, but what I've done is I've just gone and done yoga instead, or I've gone and worked out instead. So I'm trying to do things to replace that 3-hour gap where I would normally be craving
they say like in the first couple of weeks when you quit drinking it. And you have that urge, have a piece of chocolate, because the sugar is the same sugar that your body's craving.
That's
just
why
chew on some chocolate. You've heard that too?
Yeah, I've heard that.
At AA meetings, they have a lot of cookies and cake around for that reason.
Yeah, it's okay.
You know, so to your point, if I do, or your, I can't remember whose point now.
Are you drunk?
Yeah, maybe I'm drunk. You know, I haven't been like, I'm done, you know, because I know that if the more I resist it, the more it'll persist. So it's like, I'm just going to try this till January. And hopefully by that time, I'll be past it and I'll have enough distance between me and it that I won't need it. And I'm hoping that I get to a place, you know, the idea of never having one again is a little bit freaky to me, but just taking a break from it for a while and doing the work to support it, I think, will help.
Yeah, they it's something that helped me. It said, if you imagined, you know, all of the laundry that, you know, for the rest of your life, it'd be, you know, man, there's a lot of laundry, but you just do one load at a time.
Yeah. do you drink during the buddy games?
Oh, yeah.
So you probably think ahead, like, fuck, well, I'm not going to be able to drink at that buddy game.
Yeah, it's true.
I mean, it's like
you know, the lake, I spend a lot of time at my lake cabin, and there's always a Busch Light.
Yeah, for sure.
It sounds like the scariest situation to me, because I consider myself so lucky that it got as bad as it did that I just had to address it.
Yeah.
You know, like, the way that I was could not continue. Yeah. It just needed to be addressed. Yeah. It was urgent. And as a result, because I addressed it, here I've, like, you know, been able to free up so much time and get super focused and make less mistakes. And,
you know,
do you think you would have addressed it if Knoxville and them didn't come and...
I mean, dude, I was out of gas at the end of the run.
Weren't you trying to, like, trying to, like, throw yourself off a building for a stunt?
Like, it was all bad. What scares me is the idea of it... of kind of having alcoholism, just a little bit, just enough to interfere with, you know, like, your life, interfere with your relationships, slow you down, like kind of walking in quicksand a little bit, you know, but it's not so bad that it needs to be addressed, so it just goes on and on and on. I feel like I know people who have just had years kind of slip through their fingers,
yeah.
and then the years turn into decades, and the next thing you're old, and you're thinking, man, like,
yeah.
like I didn't operate at my highest potential.
Yeah,
yeah. So, it took me a while to quit drinking because I was like, oh, there's a wedding in 2 weeks.
Yeah,
or there's a friend going away. So, there, yeah. but there's always something.
Yeah. But then again, I think it's worth noting that you're evidently doing pretty well. You know, I think that
it's relative because he's probably like, what's my potential if I'm doing this well?
Right. Yeah, maybe. I mean, I am able to accomplish things, but I'm not operating as efficiently as I should be or could be.
You feel like you're eating soup with a fork?
Kind of. I'm still getting full. I'm still getting stuff done, but not as clear-headed as I need to be. You know, I'm a little bit slow in the morning, or I'm, you know, not as present as I should be as a father, which really bums me out. I'm a good dad, but I feel like I could be a really good dad if I were.
Yeah. How old's your kid now?
9.
Ooh, okay.
You know?
That's, I mean, that's important.
Yeah.
In our beverage program, mm-hmm. the literature is pretty clear that, you know, if you think you have a problem, like, you know, but this is how it works. Yeah. But you know, if you're not sure, then go give it another try.
Yeah.
You know, but if you find yourself going around the loop where you don't want to drink and you died, I went and did it, you know, and like, and then you're going, then maybe think about, like, actually, following the path laid out in the book of the beverage program.
Yeah. Yeah.
You
probably didn't see this interview going this direction, did you?
Whatever, it's all good.
It seems to happen quite a bit with us, I think.
We love it. Like I'm pretty careful about just, like, if it comes up organically, I'm happy to talk about it, but I don't, like, wave the flag. I don't lead with it. It's never my primary purpose.
Well, I think between us, we have 30 years here, right? Yeah. We have 15, 10, 5.
5, yeah.
30, yeah. 5, 10, 15.
You're 15 years clean now. Wow.
Damn. And it's crazy, huh?
That is nuts.
Next thing you know, you're the same age as old people.
That's the truth.
Yeah.
It was the best thing I could have ever done.
Oh, dude. He used to live in a porta potty.
Yeah,
I lived in a... things up in his butt on the way to prison. Stuff over there.
I lived in a handicap-sized porta potty for 2 years while I was shooting dope.
No kidding.
Yeah. Yeah, and look at me now. still putting stuff up my butt.
Where was this?
Connecticut.
Really?
Yeah. And I was comfortable, too.
Was it cold?
I was chilling. Yeah, I was freezing in the winter.
That
Connecticut. That's not Malibu.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, see how it goes, man.
Yeah.
See how it goes. And it's really pretty simple. Like, you know, if you decide to dive into the whole thing we do, we love welcoming people. And you know, it's like a herd. You want to be in the herd.
Because, right in the middle of the herd.
Yeah. You know, the predators hate the herd.
Yeah.
They want to wipe out the injured, sick ones that wander off on their own.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, we stick together and we stay pretty good.
Yeah. It's cool.
Yeah, man. So everybody's got to see Buddy Games,
Spring Awakening.
Buddy Games Spring Awakening. It's a celebration of spring break lifestyle. It's a celebration of maybe growing old, but not growing up.
Yeah, and they find themselves in the situation where it's kind of the old guard meets the new guard. You know, they weren't intending on going to spring break, but to kind of end up there in their suits that they were in at the funeral, and decide that, you know what, and they get pulled into this the games were stolen from this guy that banned them from this club way back in the day when they were there, and it becomes this thing which then leads them into this even darker place, which is extremely funny, and we touch on some socially provocative stuff, but in a really fun way.
Good, man. Yeah. And that this will be out this Sunday.
Friday. It actually comes out Friday, the 19th of May.
Okay, well then there we go. This will be Sunday, the 21st of May. So
okay,
so people can see it now.
Yes, they can. They actually can get out there and see it, and then it goes on all digital platforms. I believe June 2nd.
Got it.
So,
but how it goes on digital platforms is very influenced by how it does in the theaters.
Is that true?
Yep.
And
it is important to support the movie in theaters for the long-term success of it.
Yeah.
In all respects.
Yeah, I agree. And it's a really fun movie to watch in the theater. We just did it the other night, and it was, and people were curled over laughing.
It's
so
it's a fun movie. The cast, heavy hitters.
Yeah.
Nick Swartz and Kevin Dillon.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
So to support Josh Duhamel. Yes. Man, I'm gonna chew Macaroni's ass off. He's going to Hamill.
You can call it whatever you want.
Yeah, I love it, man. I love it. It's an honor. Thank you for doing this.
My pleasure, you guys. This is a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Super cool.
Thank you.
Of course.
All right.
Sweet.
And now we're on the other side. If there's anything that you're not comfortable with, let us. No. I'm pretty sure Ashton Kutcher wouldn't mind.
No, he's gonna find. Yeah, he's. Yeah. I've said it before.
How about that? That guy was a big time movie star. Couldn't have been nicer. Couldn't have been cooler. Couldn't have been more open and vulnerable. I mean, man, I really think that was a special one. And he did say that he has Instagram, right? So what are you waiting for? Get on over there and let him know how much he impressed you, how much he entertained you, how much he warmed your heart. Yeah, dude. Get on it, Streep team. I'd love for him to know how much you all enjoyed that. And I want you to know how much I love you for sticking around to the end. Man, thank you. It's a win for me that you're hearing me say this. I really do love you. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.